Jacob Meyer.
And you're listening to Tactical Tennis Podcast, Australian Open Edition. And on this episode, we are going to be focusing on some of the men's results. Obviously, some big happenings overnight.
What a day, man. It's not overnight over here.
Well, sure. I mean, over day there, overnight here. But I mean, I guess we'll start with probably the most shocking result, I would think, which is 29-year-old Misha Zverev, older brother of the up-and-coming Alexander Zverev, who everybody has been talking about for a couple years now as one of the next big up-and-comers. This is Misha, his older brother, who just nobody really knows about. I mean, he's been a journeyman, bumming around, peaked up at, what, 45 in the world back in 2009. This guy spent 3 full years playing futures and challenges, like 2012 to 2015. The guy doesn't play any ATP events. He's out there grinding. Yeah, he's grinding it out. And then here he is back. He's kind of slowly worked his way back up. And so he takes out world number one, and at that point, I think probably favorite to win the event, Andy Murray, in 4 sets. 7-5, 5-7, 6-2, 6-4.
Yeah.
Crazy result. So, I mean, I guess the first thing we should touch on is what Zverev does, which is by and large serves and volleys. I mean, the guy came into the net 118 times in the match.
118.
118, right?
Man, and, I watched it and I didn't even realize it was that much.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, when you're coming in on most of your serves and then on most of the other guys' turn points, it kind of adds up. So there's a few things. Perfect. I actually just got done writing an article on the blog I'm about to publish on this one. So I'll touch base quickly on a couple of the highlights, which one was the fact that he drew Murray in a lot. Murray had come into net about 48 times in his previous 3 matches, which were 9 sets in total. In these
That's
four
combined.
Sets, yep, combined. In these 4 sets, Murray came forward 44 times. That's basically as much as the entire 3 matches before, right? So
he doesn't like that.
Zverev kept taking the return and chipping it short and a little bit low, and in rallies, you know, just drawing Murray in. Murray's coming forward, and look, Murray won 66% of the points, which is a lot, but importantly, he lost a lot of big points on his serve in the first set and then later on in the match that let Zverev get back in. Because remember, in that first set, Zverev was down a break, 3-1, then down another break again at 5-3, and ended up breaking Murray 3 times in that first set alone to get back and win that set. So,
unbelievable.
Yeah, crazy. So he drew Murray in a lot and then came in a lot himself and really turned this into a vertical match. I mean, Murray obviously is a very, very competent volleyer. I think, you know, of the, you know, the top 10, top 20 players in the world. I mean, I think you'd only look at Fed and maybe Nadal as being better at the net than him. And I say Nadal maybe. I mean, he's very, very competent in the forecourt. And yet... You know, obviously the net points didn't work out very well for him because, I mean, he's even stronger side to side, lateral movement. And so Zverev turned this into a vertical match, up and down, you know, moving in, getting lob, passing shots, and just made this a match where Murray never got to find his rhythm.
Yeah, I wonder to some degree what the real story here, if it's more the way that Zverev plays, or if is it really just that Murray didn't step up and just blow him off the court? I mean, what exactly were we expecting?
Well, I don't think that's the thing about, you know, serve volley tennis and the way Zverev approached this match is Murray doesn't get the opportunity to just step up and blow him off the court because the guy's coming in on his own. And look, it's a good serve. I mean, the guy's hitting a heavy lefty serve, a lot of movement on it. He's coming in behind it all the time. So you don't get to step up and blow him off the court there. And then on the return games, again, like he's playing short, low returns a lot of the time, pulling Murray forward, just making the points really a little bit awkward. He's using the slice deep to extend points and kind of blunt Murray's power. You know, I just don't think Murray really had the opportunity to do this. This was a match that was purely about dynamic play, about passing shots and athleticism. And, I mean, look, yep. Murray is obviously a very fit, very fast guy. But when it comes to the grace, I think, and we look at him, I mean, from a purely athleticism point of view, like, he's no Gael Monfils, you know.
Purely, and this is going to upset some people, but purely athletically, Misha might be more, I don't know what, more
dynamic,
vertically
I think
athletic.
Yeah, just when we
Murray.
Look at him.
He's not as fit, and he's not as strong.
No.
But Misha's known, I mean.
He may be as strong, who knows? But we know he's not as fit. But the point is, when you see the net play of the two of them, and you see the way that Misha is able to move and explode and jump and twist and turn, he just has a dynamic movement about him that Murray, for all his obvious, strengths, his speed, his fitness, his, kind of agility, it just can't quite match, And I think that Misha just outperformed him in that regard. He just made this a very dynamic. I mean, here's the interesting thing too. Murray hit 71 winners in the match to only 28 unforced errors, right?
Pretty darn good.
Which, I mean, those are absurd numbers. Those are absurd numbers. And yet lost the match in four sets. So, this was just a match that was about big points, as like I said, very dynamic play. And Misha came up aces, really. He broke Murray 8 times, had 17 break opportunities. I can't remember the last time we said that about Andy Murray. Somebody having 17 opportunities to break him in four sets.
Well, it's almost like Misha just put together the game plan to beat Murray specifically. Like,
Well, that's
what
the
are
thing.
Murray's
I don't
weaknesses?
think so, because this is just the way Misha plays. I
Well,
just
this
think
is the way, right,
I
but
think
I'm
it's
saying that
kind of
it's a
the same way
perfect.
that we look at Nadal Federer, and you say it's almost like Nadal learned to play tennis specifically to beat Roger in a way, like just the way the matchup works up. I think it's just a similar dynamic here. Zverev's natural game matched up very well to Murray. And look, let's be real, this could have been a nightmare matchup for him because Murray's a great returner, and Murray's got a fantastic lob, and is a good passer of the ball at the net.
That's actually the first thing that some of the guys said is they don't understand why Murray didn't lob a lot more
Well, he
because
did lob a fair amount, but this is one of the things that I think Zverev did very, very well, was when he came forward, he closed hard and took away the option, so that a lot of the times when Murray did lob, Zverev was sitting on it. Murray hit a great lob in the very fir in Zverev's very first service game of the match when he got the break up, like a fantastic lob winner. But if you watch over the course of the match, a lot of times Murray's hitting the lob, Zverev's there, he's getting the overhead, and even if he's not putting them all away, he's reestablishing his net position and getting the next volley that he can put away or finish on. I think Zverev just played a fantastic match. It ended up being a great matchup for him, just the way that he played it, and good outcome. I don't think we're going to see the same thing with Fed, but we'll touch on that, I
Well,
think,
so
in a future episode. But
I mean, I want to dive into this just a little bit more because one of the things, I mean, I've coached against Misha and nobody likes to play him,
well, who
okay?
would? I mean, he's awkward. It's not a style of tennis we see very much anymore.
And because I think we all recognize that it's dangerous, and the truth is, when he loses matches, he's got a reputation for just not quite delivering, I'll call it mentally. Like you always feel a little bit lucky when you sneak one out against Misha because he's capable of serving very well, not just crafty as a lefty, but he's capable of serving actually big
Oh, absolutely.
and just hitting aces and spreading the court. And when he's carving a lefty slice and serving and volleying, and he's got, and this is something again that people might not go crazy about, but he has one of the best backhand volleys on the tour.
Oh, yeah, very clean.
And it doesn't look like much. Like to me, it looks even too clean. But I'm telling you, over the last 10 matches, you can count how many backhand volleys this guy's missed. Like you could count manually. It would not take you very long. He probably only missed a handful in the whole match against Murray. And
Well, and this is one, you talk about the kind of the mental letdowns. This is one of the things about a lot of people don't realize, because there's not very many serve volleys out there. And obviously I serve and volley my way through college, paid for my undergraduate degree, is it's the mental focus that you need to successfully serve and volley from start to finish of a match is phenomenal, because you can't lose focus. Everything's happening so quickly. Like the points are so dynamic. The time frame in which the interchange happens, because you're at the net constantly. Serve, return. You're playing that first volley. You're at the service line. Next thing, you're at the net. The time frame's so quick. You don't have a moment during a point where you can reset. You don't get to play a defensive lob when you're at the net. You don't get to just play a slice ball and say, you know what, I'll set up on the next shot. There's no reset button in the middle of a serve and volley point. And so if you lapse for just a moment, and the games are so quick, you know, the points are short, the games tend to be quick. If you have a 45-second lapse in concentration, that's a break, and that makes that very, very hard. And so I think that's what you've probably seen a lot from him when you've coached against him and seen him play matches. Just that very brief lapse in concentration, if he loses focus for a short time, you know, you can't just grind out some points like that. Like, yeah, that's it. It's gone. Well,
I think that there's two things that really, really stand out to me. One, like Misha's forehand is what we would call a bit of a weakness on the tour because – I mean, he's capable of really sticking it, but the technique isn't great. It's a very short swing.
It is also very hard to read in his defense, you know, I guess, or it's, to his benefit. It's an awkward shot to read. It's very...
Yes, exactly. And he can pass well off of it because it's very hard to read and because...
And that shortened backswing.
He's got almost no backswing. So on the run, his forehand is the same as when he's just, you know, standing with 2 seconds to hit the ball.
Sure.
Yeah. So... It's not as if, and, you know, we might see this in the next round. Like, if he had played, say, Rafa, and he's just, you know, putting those little forehands into the middle of the court, where Murray's working him around and giving him an opportunity to get in, you know, some guys are just going to punish him.
Right.
But the other thing that stood out is, you know, Misha's coming in on second serves just the whole day. And really putting pressure in a way that we don't see a lot on the tour. And I think when you do that, you expose the other side of the equation that you talked about in kind of serve and volley tennis, which is if you're coming in on a guy, you're not serving and volleying, but if you're coming in on
the
server,
that's the same pressure they feel of, just like a pass somebody all day long. And that was always my philosophy was, look, if you can – I'm 6'2" – I'd like to think reasonably, if you can pass me 100 times...
Now, to everyone listening, he's insanely athletic.
Well, regardless...
I wish my tour guys were as athletic as you.
Regardless,
and that's not
like,
an exaggeration.
If you can pass me 100 times, you deserve the match. You know, I'm just going to say, well played, and walk away. So, you know, I mean, there's that. There's that sustained pressure. I just have to keep coming up with winner after winner. And there you go. I mean, Murray hit 71 winners in 4 sets and lost the match, which is crazy. But we can't talk about this all day. So let's move on to Dimitrov-Gasquet, which I think was, you know, the article I was intending to write originally before this big upset overnight was actually, has Dimitrov arrived? And I think the answer to that is yes.
Well, I mean, you just move straight on to another guy who's coming into the net to polish off the, you know, the easy ones and take away that grinding tennis.
But let's be real here. I mean, he had 24 net approaches in his 3 sets to Misha's odd 120. But
how many did he win?
Right. Well, I think that's the key thing, isn't it? He won 88% of his net points for the match. So Dimitrov takes out Gasquet in straight sets, 6-3, 6-2, 6-4. Now, Dimitrov obviously is a guy who we've seen for years has had phenomenal talent. You don't earn the nickname Baby Fed for having a sloppy, ugly game. I mean, the guy hits the ball cleanly. He's very athletic. He's got beautiful technique on almost every shot. I wouldn't call his serve technique beautiful, but I think his forehand technique is beautiful. His backhand technique is beautiful.
People love his serve technique, though, because his first serve is so effective.
Well, it's a great first serve, don't get me wrong.
Spots at 125.
Yeah, I'm not disparaging his serve in any way. I'm just saying it's not as clean as the rest of his game.
I completely agree with you.
It's beautiful. But, you know, he just hasn't really come through. He's had some great results here and there. But, you know, middle of last year, we started to see a bit of a shift from him. And now I think we're seeing the fruits of his labors. I mean, he wins Brisbane with, 3 wins over top 10 players there. And what impressed me there was, I mean, it won not just the way that he beat Raonic, who obviously is playing some fantastic tennis at the moment, was the way watching him play Raonic and then Nishikori back-to-back, we saw 2 different game plans out of Dimitrov, which isn't something I think we've traditionally seen. The guy just comes out and hits balls. And when he hits balls well and he's kind of in the mood, he plays great tennis. And when he doesn't, he's not. But he's all over the place. And this was the first time it looked like he actually had a real cohesive game plan that made sense for who he was playing. Against Raonic, you saw him using his slice backhand, moving the big guy around, getting the ball low on him, and really working the point. And then against Nishikori in the final, he's hitting over more backhands and dictating play and really kind of using the fact that he has more weapons than Nishikori. It was just great to see, and now here we are, and he just just toured okay. Gasquet.
So, in Brisbane, I mean, I gotta be honest, like, beating Raonic didn't even impress me, okay?
Okay.
I'm not sure that Raonic really brought his A-plus game in Brisbane. And I'm, at the same time, if Milos serves 100 aces, then he's always going to be tough to beat. But I think that the level that we're used to from him, I mean, Gregor might have beaten him with that level anyway. What really impressed me was the way he beat Nishikori, because Nishikori is playing very, very well right now. He's not making mistakes. He's pummeling the forehand. He's always had one of the best backhands on the tour. He's moving well. He's serving well. And we look at stats from Gregor, like, he came to the net 24 times against Gasquet last night, right? Well, it feels like it's two or three times that many when you watch the match, because he's hitting so many balls. Like, half of his winners are coming as forehands from the middle of the court that are really approach shots that are just
not coming back.
They're just not coming
right,
back.
Which ironically is very hands. Reminiscent of Federer back, you know, if we go back 10 years ago, yep. Wind the clock back. One of the things that always stood about at Federer, and I think part of the reason, amongst many reasons, that he was so dominant in that period, that era, was if you gave Federer a ball inside the baseline in the middle of the court as a forehand, the point was over.
Yeah.
I mean, the point was over. And we're getting a little more of that sense from Dimitrov now, where he gets those short forehands and the ball's not coming back. Or if it does, he's up at the net 88% of the time, mopping up and taking care of business, you know?
And this is what really stood out courtside at Brisbane. When you were there, you got the feeling that Gregor was coming forward. Not that he was
necessarily making it
punishing
to the net.
Yeah, and not just that he was punishing forehands from the middle of the court, but that his intention was coming forward.
Right.
The same way that I think Federer, when he was playing his best tennis in, say, 04, 05, 06, or 07, he was trying to come forward, and he had a very clear intention of, I'm finishing at the net. And after dominating the world for a couple of years, it's like he realized, well, I don't necessarily need to continue running into the net because the ball's like, I'm not even getting volleys.
Right. Well, let's not make this about Federer now. but
right.
One of the things I think that, well, so we've got 48 winners for Gasquet in this match in three quick sets. and he won more points on receiving on the second serves and for Gasquet than he did on his own,
mm-hmm.
which I think is interesting. But yeah, no, I mean, I think there's just that intent, that aggressive intent of I'm looking for my opportunity. And if you don't hang in the point with me long enough for me to get a volley, then, you know, oh well. But yeah, there's that direction there. And I think it's just great to see him coming out with cohesive game plans, which I think a lot of credit for this obviously goes to a change in his coaching staff.
Roger
Rashid, great guy, obviously, and excellent when it comes to getting players incredibly fit. But not what we would call a Brad Gilbert when it comes to the tactics and the matchups and putting together game plans. And, you know, I think that was not a good fit for Dimitrov. But obviously now I think he's found a better partnership, and we're seeing the fruits of that.
Yeah, and to some degree I think it depends on how you look at it. And Roger's perspective seems to be that Gregor had some real motivation issues, and that those are the things that he really needed to work through in order to set him up to play the tennis that he's playing now. And at first I was skeptical when I heard that, but then the more I think about it, the more I think, you know, this actually makes some sense, you know? I mean, this is a guy who got anointed as baby Fed when he was still a teenager, and, you know, the style of tennis that he's playing right now is actually incredibly physical.
Sure.
And this,
but he's
this
been in great
probably
shape before. I mean, let's be real. He's been in great shape before. This is
being
not
in
the first
great
time.
Being in great shape is different than going out there and wanting to play points at the highest intensity you can all the time.
Sure.
I mean, Gasquet has stronger legs than Gregor. Even Roger Rashid conceded that on the Australian feed at some point last night.
Right.
But Gasquet is just not going to work in the same way that Gregor is.
Well, of course not. So, moving on, obviously another huge result. We've got, forget Baby Fed, the original McCoy is still out there and through to the next round over Nishikori in five sets. So let's talk a little about that match. Obviously, I mean, tell me this. First set, when Nishikori's up 4-love, are you thinking that Federer's going to walk away and win this match?
No, no chance. I'm just thinking Nishikori is playing really well, like I've been telling people since we saw him at the beginning of the year.
Sure. So,
and I think he, and I think honestly that he maintained his level. I don't think that Nishikori fell off, and I think that if you actually talk to him, he would just say, you know, I mean, just too good. You know, I don't know if I can. I mean, what do you want me to do? You know, on another day, a point here or there could have changed the momentum, but like,
right? Well, I mean, yeah. If you look at the statistics, I mean, Federer has 83 winners. Which, I mean, when you're playing against somebody who's coming into the net every point, that's a different story. But Nishikori's back there grinding points out, obviously pressuring with the forehand when he can and the backhand as well. But this is Nishikori's not a guy who's easy to hit winners on.
No, I mean, far from it. Hitting 83 winners on Nishikori is like hitting 83 winners on Djokovic. It basically doesn't happen.
Well, except, I guess, if you're Federer and hitting your forehand the way that Fed's been hitting his forehand since the start of the year. And this really stood out to me at the Hopman Cup in his very first comeback match was, I remember sitting down to watch some of the highlights, and it's very early in the match, there's a little, you know, rally going on, and two or three balls in, Fed just gets this forehand that was, like, the ball comes in and it's a good ball, and Fed just pulled the trigger, and bam, it's gone. You know, a cross-court forehand win in the middle of a rally, and I thought, that's something we haven't seen in a while. And he's kept at it since.
And how long has it been since we've seen the cross-court forehand winner from Fed? Because he used to live off of that thing.
Sure. Well, heck, I mean, he used to hit forehand winners everywhere in the court. But, yeah, I mean, just the capacity to do it. Just always seemed like. And the funny thing to me is, like, I mean, I'm not watching him move. And, you know, we saw it against Nishikori last night. Like, he's still not moving the way that he used to. And never will, let's be realistic, probably. But even without that, he's just dictating play with the forehand. I mean, I saw him give up on balls that once upon a time I think he might have hit winners on, and he didn't even break on them. He just said, okay, you know what, I'm just not even going to move on that, and mm-hmm. yet there he is, just controlling play, and obviously playing the kind of tennis that sees him through. 24 aces, obviously the guys. Then this is a huge part of it. Without the movement being where it once was, is, I mean, 68% first serves. Which should be fine if you're Rafael Nadal and just sliding, you know, lefty sliders into people's backhands all day long.
But he's pummeling it.
He's clocking it into corners. Yeah. I mean, like, he used the body serve to great effect against Nishikori last night. I mean, that's a phenomenally high number, especially to hold that over five sets, which is the other big thing, I think. You know, we're obviously a lot of people worried about Fed's conditioning and how he's going to pull up after a match like that. This is very important for everybody to understand is, at the end of five sets, if you're still holding 68% first serves, you know, you're not that tired. You're just not that tired.
Either that or you have Roger Federer's service motion.
Right. Well, and obviously that's a part of it. But, you know, I mean, like, his first serve percentage did drop a little in the fifth set. Let's be real. I mean, it was 59% in the fifth set as opposed to 72% in the fourth. But point being, I think, just that he's serving absolutely phenomenally, and that serve sets up everything else in his game, as it always has. First ball after the forehand has been a critical pattern. First forehand, or I guess, or a forehand as the first ball after the serve. How about that? Has been a critical pattern for Fed for the last decade. You know, when we look at the stats, when he gets a forehand for the first ball, he wins the vast majority of the points on his own serve. When he gets a backhand as the first ball, he wins well under 50%. And so him hitting his first serve and hitting his spots is massive. And when he pulls up numbers like that, you know, he's winning 80% in all on first serve and serving 68%. It's hard to see anybody beating him when he serves that well.
It just felt like every time that he was under pressure and Nishikori really would get some momentum and some energy going his way, Fed could stand up and answer with just not a purely flat serve, but what I'll say, like, a flattened out version of his serve, mm-hmm. where he's adding maybe 10 miles an hour to it and tasting a line. And, you know, you could see it on Nishikori's face that he's just like, you know, I mean, what can I do? If the guy comes up with a huge serve 35 times.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, and that's not, I mean, so Nishikori was 3 of 10 on break points, which means 7 times up if they came up with a good. But then you've got all those critical points before the break point at serving at 15, 30, and 30 all, where he just came up with the goods over and over again. last night.
So many. And so many deuce points where Nish plays like a great point to fight off ending the game, and so many 30-alls. And, you know, it's just, I've never seen Nishikori hang his head that many times because of the tennis.
Right.
Where he's like, oh, I'm playing good, I'm playing good. Oh, man, winner.
Sure, sure. And this is critical too, obviously, for Nishikori being such a strong returner, is he got three breaks across five sets, and two of them came in the first set. So he broke Federer one time in the four sets that followed.
Yeah.
Those are crazy numbers. Crazy. So the other, obviously, big result, not from last night, but Nadal threw. So, I mean, I feel like it's 2006 again. You know,
we were joking earlier in the locker room because some of the guys were like, "Oh yeah, we're gonna see all this new blood, like new tennis coming through." And then
we are seeing the new tennis come through, but it's just still getting beaten
we
by
are.
Old tennis.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The funny thing is, I mean, Istomin's not exactly young. Zverev senior.
I shouldn't call
Zverev senior because obviously you've got Alexander Zverev senior, who's the dad, and then Alexander Zverev junior. Who everyone's expecting to be, you know, obviously one of the next big things. I mean, he's already.
Yeah, he
very,
is.
Very
he's
well.
Playing really
but,
high
you know,
level
so
tennis.
So anyway, older brother Misha is 29. And then obviously, you know, Nadal comes through with this big result over Zverev last night in five sets.
Yeah, and, you know, Sasha, I've got to call him Sasha because.
No, yeah, that just makes things easier. Let's do it.
Yeah, the brother Zverev thing will confuse me. But Sasha played a really high-level match. And, you know, Sasha still has some holes in his game because, frankly, that's just about the only way he loses.
Sure. I mean, look at the, I mean, the net is really, I think, when you look at the forecourt,
yeah.
I mean, he won 59% of points at the net, which is funny given that his brother Misha won 55%, even less, and won the match in four, but it all comes down to when you're coming in. And, you know, for Misha,
right.
That was a calculated strategy because he knows if he comes in on almost every point in a match and wins 55% of them, he's in great shape. But for Zverev, these points when Zverev is coming into the net are points he should be winning, that he's expecting to win. Because he's come into the net because he's earned a short ball. He's gotten ahead in the point. He's not chipping and charging and coming forward to put pressure on. He's working the point, working the rally, earning a short ball, coming in, and then still losing the point almost half the time. I mean, that's crushing, you know. Nadal went 71% on the night with his net points won. And, I mean, you can look at it right there, and that's basically the difference in the match, is that execution in the forecourt.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, say, Misha and Grigor, they had a strategy of getting to the net in order to do something specific. Grigor is trying to finish points that he starts from the ground. Misha is trying to get in on people's service games because he knows that's just the way that he follows a serve. But when he's returning, he knows if you have a lapse in concentration for 1 minute, he can win 3 points. And all of a sudden, you're love 40 on your serve, and he's going
to
break.
And then you have to come up with a pass to stay in it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that works. For Nadal, he's always been very tidy cleaning up at the net.
Yes.
But what really stood out against Sasha is he's not using like some new strategy. He is hitting the snot out of the ball.
Right. I mean, yeah, he's obviously always had a big game, and he's out there crushing it and earning
yeah, but
short balls
been,
on Nadal, but.
He's been up and down for the last couple of years about what his aggression level is. I mean, if you don't know this about Nadal, if you still think of Nadal as hitting like a spinny, like grinding forehand, he can probably hit the biggest forehand in the game. It's like him and Verdasco are right up there at the top. He's hitting triple-digit forehands at will in practice. And so, you know, everyone knows that he can just go out there and hit the ball 90 miles an hour the whole day. But that doesn't mean that he does it all the time, because most of the time he doesn't.
Sure.
But, I mean, he's hitting the ball big against Sasha, and he's moving well. He's hitting the backhand big. He's serving at higher speeds, you know, and he's not missing very much.
Right. That's a good combination. I mean, it'd be interesting to see, too, how he pulls up. I mean, he came from two sets to one down and you know, virtually steamrolled the last two sets, 6-3, 6-2. But, you know, I guess there is a question about where his conditioning is at, you know, how well he'll hold up for an entire slam. given obviously his injury history.
I mean, I think that the question is more about between his ears. Like, physically, he can push through. I think it's a question of what sort of a massive effort it takes for him to play this way, because, it's not his preferred way to play. He doesn't really like hitting that big. He likes having a little bit more time. He likes to play it more conservative. And you just get the feeling that, with Milos still out there, with TM, however I pronounce Dominic's name, still out there, with Dimitrov attacking the way he is, Rafa's gonna have to take it to people
Right, he
the way
can't sit
he took
around.
it to
There's
Sasha.
too many. Yeah, there's too many guys left in the draw who can come out and attack him aggressively and have a good day and win that match. He can't be passive. And I get what you're saying. Like, it costs him energy. It costs him mental energy to come out and play aggressively. It's not his default state. It's not his comfort state. So that there's kind of a mental fatigue that builds up over time as he keeps playing this. Which is contrary to the way that he played professional tennis for 13, 14 years. So that'll be interesting to see. So if we look ahead now at the men's matches we have remaining, I mean, we've got obviously one half of the draw is set for quarterfinals. We've got Zverev, Federer, and then Wawrinka, Tsonga, which obviously both of them had good wins, but we'll just pass on that because I think those matches weren't quite as riveting as the others. But if we look forward to the matches we have coming up tonight, we've got Monfils and Nadal. So, do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, so many thoughts. We're really excited for that. I'm just gonna say I'm picking Rafa just because,
Just because you're a daredevil like
and
that? Feeling
just
bold.
because,
Yeah.
I mean, Monfils is capable of beating anyone. He's capable of winning this tournament, but I think
Right.
Rafa's got superior conditioning. Let's see how people enjoy listening to that one. And I honestly just think that he's confident against Lamont.
Yeah,
I
well,
think
I
that
don't
he's
think
just going to win it.
everybody's gonna say that Monfils is slower than Nadal, but I mean, I don't think anybody's gonna argue that Nadal's probably the fitter of the two, or traditionally has been. But I mean, I think it just this one to me is just a sheer mental game. I mean, Monfils has never really had the discipline to go out and really have the impact that Sam said he should, let alone even at the smaller tournaments. But for him to go out and play the kind of match he needs to against Nadal across best of five, there's just no way. I mean, Nadal's going to win that match, barring some sort of an injury. The next match, I think, is a little less interesting on the books, at least. And we've got Milos Raonic and Bautista Agut. I actually, honestly, haven't seen Agut play this tournament so far. But, well,
Well,
obviously, there's
it's
been some
when
other more
there's
riveting viewing taking place. And that's no
yeah,
disrespect to Roberto, but let's be real.
when there's this much high level tennis, there's just only so many hours in the
Right.
day, and this is what.
You have to pick your poison. But I can't see something going wrong, Ray, and it just should be a walkthrough on that one. I
Well,
mean, it's just so many weapons.
I will say this. Upsets are contagious. We saw it on the women's side.
Sure.
Shout out to Coco, who
Oh my God.
played some of the best tennis that you're ever going to see. And she's capable of that, and everyone that knows her knows she's capable of that, even though she hasn't done it very often. But, Djokovic goes down, and the next thing you know,
Murray's out.
Murray starts to question himself, and then you see it bleed over into the women's side. I think
Right.
you could
We see that. We
see.
saw that big upset in the seeds of Federer taking out Nishikori.
I think that you're going to see some real pressure in
That was half a joke, but yeah.
the Rafa Monfils match. It was half a joke. I'll give you half a joke.
Thanks.
And
Half a
then
laugh.
I think that what I'm looking for in the Raonic match is going to be a real test of what's in between the ears with Raonic, because you could see some of that pressure bleed over into his match. And if he plays a
Right.
mediocre match, I think that's a bad sign. If he goes out there and takes care of business and beats Bautista Agut in straight sets, which I don't think is a given, then I think, we have to sort of perk up, because people aren't talking about Milos as much all of a sudden.
There's so
And,
much going on, but yeah. Well,
there's so much going on. But if he struts Bautista Agut, I think you have to look at him as being the guy who's most excited that the top two seeds are out.
Oh, absolutely. Well, here's the thing to me about Milos too, really quickly, is that this is not a guy who. It reminds me a little bit of Misha Zverev in that. I mean, Zverev knows who he is as a player. There's no confusion in his head about what he needs to be doing out in the court. And Milos very much reminds me of that, in that he has a very clear direction. He knows who he is as a player. He knows what side his bread is buttered on. And he's going to go out there and hit big serves and hit big forehands and take his chances. And he feels good about that over, a best of five sets match. I will say for Batista Gietz, he's had a couple of solid wins. Nishioka, solid little player, 6-2, 6-3, 6-3, cleaned him up. Ferrer in four, and obviously we're not talking about the David Ferrer of 5 years ago. This is not that player. Ferrer's dropped down, and he's 21 in the seeds at this tournament. I think tennis has caught up to David in a way that is a shame, but inevitable. So he's had some solid wins coming in, but I just don't think he's played anybody with this kind of firepower, and I just don't think he has what it takes to make Milos uncomfortable enough to win that match.
Well, Batista Gu has a big game. Nishioka, who a lot of guys probably don't know, is like a, I guess you'd call him a challenger player. He's in the top 100. He's a smaller Japanese guy. He is super fast, and he hits on the run like probably as well as anybody. For you to beat him that badly, you've got to have some serious firepower.
Or
I mean,
just play
that's just.
incredibly clean. I mean, that's, is your other real option. Or just do both, I guess. But I guess, I get that Batista Gut has a big game, but I just think between Milos's serve and his conviction to the way that he's playing, I
Yeah,
think it's going to be a really struggle for Batista Gut to come through on that one. But I think
it should be.
maybe the most interesting matchup. Well, I guess we've got this is really such an amazing tournament this year. Maybe the most interesting Grand Slam we've had in the last, goodness gracious, I couldn't even tell you how long. But TM
It's been a
Goffin is
while.
another, I think, just fantastic matchup, and kind of a compelling match. TM obviously up and coming and playing some great ball. Goffin's Goffin.
Dominic is, I mean, it's hard to like. Do you remember when Rafa came on the scene?
No,
Say,
I have no recollection whatsoever.
he'd been around for a couple of years when he's maybe like
Who's this
19.
Rafa guy you're talking about?
Yeah. And people were like, man, like that forehand is just vicious.
So heavy, yeah.
Dominic does that off of both sides.
Right.
Like, guys are afraid to play him because they don't want to go through the pain.
Right, because it's, I mean, just every ball's a struggle. Like, you're battling to control it constantly. It's
It's savage,
it's
and it
fatiguing, and not just physically fatiguing, it's mentally fatiguing, because you've got to
ugh.
focus. Because if you, I mean, when the ball's that heavy and it's kicking up and you're, a hundredth of a second off in your timing, it's in the stands, and you just can't, like, every ball you got to focus and work and fight it and, it's never ending.
And, he's still developing tactically.
Sure.
He really is. But as far as just what he's capable of hitting, I mean, he's got, his technique is clean everywhere. He doesn't really have holes in the game. He's just learning. And, Golfin is a guy who has some of the best groundies on the tour. He's up there with probably some of the best movement patterns on the tour as well.
Right.
He is. Like, he's capable of just handling everything that Dominic's going to throw at him.
Right, and may
But
actually have the structure in his game to, kind of wear him
he
down.
might. I mean, I could see Goffin going out there and playing just a lights out, unbelievable match and winning it. But you could also see Dominic going out there and literally just out hitting one of the best ground strokers on the tour. So yeah, that's one, that's the match that will be on in all the locker rooms. And that's the
Sure.
match that all the guys will be watching. And no
Well,
one will be
yeah.
talking
I mean,
about. It'll
this is
be,
kind of a
it's
summary
interesting.
of what's coming. This is our preview of what tennis is going to be like in 5 years, in terms of, when, I mean, hell, Federer will probably still be in quarterfinals or slams at that point. But once Murray's gone and Nadal's gone, all the normal human beings have retired. These are the guys that are going to step in and fill those shoes. So, it'll be fascinating. I think obviously there's a lot of interest in seeing how they play and the outcome of this one. And that brings us to Dimitrov and Istomin. Good old Dennis.
Dennis is playing lights out
Right,
tennis, by
well,
the way.
there's not the letdown, I mean, obviously he gets the biggest win of his career, and we're all waiting for him to just collapse in his next match, and he doesn't. He comes
No
out
let.
and guts out like a good, tough win.
No letdown. Oh,
Yeah.
can we talk about, by the way, how I talked up Karlovic and then he just got absolutely straight set it afterwards?
Yeah, I wasn't going to
But,
mention that for your sake, but yeah, touch on it
well,
briefly.
you got to own it, right? Credit where it's due.
Sure.
But Yzerman is really playing well. I mean, it looks like it's not a fluke. Like he's at least figured something out for these 2 weeks.
Right. I mean, the second seeded win in a row, obviously, after Djokovic, he takes out, I'm not even sure how to pronounce this one, Carreño Busta. He almost sounds like he should be a rapper. But
No, we just
Busta, Busta,
our
is it?
Spanish is
Yeah.
bad.
My
That's
sta
just the way it
that
is.
we all knew that. Yeah, but I mean, the other thing that worries me a little bit about this is that's another five set match for Istomin, and for a guy, who's obviously had some injuries over the years and whatnot. I got to wonder about how well he's going to recover, given that he doesn't. I mean, it's one thing when you're Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer, these guys who just have so much in the way of resources available to them that.
Dennis doesn't have that. He
Right, he
doesn't,
doesn't have that. He's not,
and he doesn't have, like,
having
he's a
everybody
fit
waiting on their
guy,
foot. Yeah, but he's
but he's
not.
not known as being that good of a mover. He's moving better than I've ever seen him move here at this tournament.
Right, but the
And
thing is, at the
so,
moment that stops, he's not the same player. And after back-to-back
exactly.
five-set matches like this, I just feel like this is going to be a tough one for him. And then you've got, obviously, Dimitrov coming out, and Grigor's playing great ball. I think Grigor's going to take this one in three, maybe four.
I think that Istomin is a guy who really doesn't have the game to beat someone that's coming forward because he likes to pass flat and hitting the ball flat just isn't going to get it around someone as athletic as Grigor at the net.
Sure, and Grigor's not gonna give him, I think, the opportunities to play the same patterns that we saw against Djokovic. By the way, so who do you pick out of Team Goffin or Goffin?
I'm gonna say, it's probably a toss-up, but I'm gonna say Dominic just because I think he's just playing. I mean, he's just savage. Like he's just wrecking the ball, and I've got to pick him just out of respect for what he's doing because we haven't seen anyone do that in ages.
Sure.
Tactically, that bothers me because I feel like it's actually a great matchup for Goffin, and Goffin has exactly what it takes to bother Dominic and to get in his head
Right.
and to handle what he throws at you. But I think that this one is going to be an emotional battle that the German's going to win.
Fair enough, fair enough. I think you're probably right on that one. I'm backing TM as well. I think that he just. The weapons that he has at this point. He's obviously playing very well, feeling good. Worries me a little bit that he's dropped a set every match so far. I mean, look, fair enough, you drop a set to Pear, but dropping a set to Jay Thompson and to Jay Struff, who.
Hey, take it easy on Jordan. That guy can grind.
I'm sure he can. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying, he's not top 10 in the world. I mean.
That's fair.
TM,
That's fair.
TM's the 8 seed at this point. Like, this is not, and look, I get it, you drop a set to, like, a good grinder like that once, right? But Struff also drops a set there. Just worrying a little bit, that every step of the way he's dumped a set somewhere.
Struff's a fellow German. And I mean, to be fair, if
Well,
you go
TM's
back
from
and look at.
Austria, just to be clear.
Okay, fine. Yes,
Fair
they're
enough.
different countries, but they've known each other for a long time and there's still an
Sure.
emotional component to them playing is the point. So
Right, no, absolutely.
hopefully people don't think that like my European geography is that bad. But what he's doing, like look at the first set against Thompson. I mean, the
Sure,
guy's
well, the first
barely
two
winning
sets.
points.
Yeah, 6-2, 6-1. Yeah, but then, why the drop? Why the 7-6 set that he loses, And again, it's Struff, like, drops the first set 6-4, and then it's 6-4, 6-4, 6-3. I mean, for a guy with that many weapons. Like, why is he dropping these sets? It's just a little
Because
concerning.
he's not constructing points as well as he
Ex
could. He's not playing
exactly.
perfect
And that's, I
tennis.
guess, where I'm getting at is that the worry is against Goffin, obviously, if he's not constructing points as well as he should, and Goffin obviously is no slouch, it just makes for a very interesting
It's gonna be fun.
match. It will be,
It's
it will
gonna be
be.
fun.
Anyway, we're going to wrap up there and hopefully touch base again in a couple of days and have some more fantastic results to look at. In the meanwhile, pop over to obviously where all the articles are at, which tacticaltennis.com. We did acquire that domain name. And you can shoot us emails about the podcast or blog articles, me at Glenn at tactical.tennis and Jacob at Jacob at tactical.tennis. Hope to hear from you
That's me.
guys. Follow us on where the podcast is also on iTunes. If you're not following us there, you can, or whatever other platform you choose. But
Find us. Tell us where we should be. That'll
yeah,
help.
absolutely. But great, great tennis. Obviously, great time to be a tennis fan. And so excited. I mean, I think I haven't been this excited about a Grand Slam and all the results going on in at least 5 years, maybe even 10. This is just phenomenal stuff.
It's great.
Yeah,
The
happy to
energy
really
here is
see. Oh, and I
awesome.
mean, just to see like these two generations that are still all of them kind of coming together and the intermingling going on here and all these matchups. It's just such an exciting time to be watching tennis. So hope you all are enjoying it near as much as we are. And thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys next time.
See ya.